I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
This is a true crime and real-time roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crimes reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. We're unpacking the trial of Carmelo Anthony, which concluded this week. Anthony, a 19-year-old who is accused of stabbing 17-year-old Austin Metcalf to death at a Frisco track meet last year, was found guilty of murder this week, and his attorneys have already filed an intent to appeal. Anthony's family told CBS News that they were, quote, delusional to think that the trial would result in a fair outcome, and they've claimed that witnesses lied on the stand. While the trial proceedings were mostly closed to the media, we'll get an inside look into what was going on in and outside of the Collin County Courthouse as the jury reached its decision. This reporting comes out of Odyssey station KRLD 1080 in Dallas. We'll actually start our dive into the Anthony case with reporting from Tuesday morning, before the verdict was delivered. Anthony's legal team announced the day before that the defense was resting its case.
And that was apparently a real surprise for people that are watching this. Even the jury kind of gasped when he said the defense rests.
It was a surprise to us.
Yeah, they really didn't do a lot of witnesses. I think they called 7 in total or 6.
Yeah.
And Carmelo Anthony didn't take the stand.
He did not.
The first voice you heard there belongs to Austin York. And the second was Mike Rogers. They host the Mid-Morning Mic Check on KRLD. Russell Scott, another KRLD reporter, joined them from the Collin County Courthouse in McKinney, Texas.
I'm getting the sense out there that a lot of people watching this from the legal standpoint are just kind of confused with what the defense was trying to do. At one point, even suggesting that Metcalf may have impaled himself.
Yeah, there were some back and forth outside of the courtroom about that and whether that could have happened or something like that. It's normally because the defense was saying this was self-defense. Normally in a self-defense case, you'll have the defendant take the stand in his own defense to talk about that. They didn't do that, which surprised a lot of people. And that's when people started suggesting that maybe they were looking at a manslaughter or maybe criminally negligent homicide.
Now, they didn't put Carmelo Anthony himself on the stand. Who did the defense put on the stand yesterday, Russell?
They called a couple of students. They called a coach who was at the school with him. And that's all that they called. That's pretty much it. And the students were there. I think there were 3 students were called to testify that the track culture is kind of a social event where students go back and forth between team tents and will often go to other teams' tents just to visit and kind of make it a social event. Now, you might remember the prosecution, when they called some students, they said, no, that's not the case. So you've got both sides presenting different witnesses and what their thoughts are on the social situation at a track meet.
It's one of those, though, if you're saying, hey, I was scared for my life, why not hear from him? He's the only one that could tell you what he was feeling.
Because cross-examination.
Yeah, we know that. There is a risk.
That's why.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, for some context about how the trial was going leading up to the verdict on Tuesday, we're going to listen in on a KRLD report from Friday, June 5th. While some trials are recorded and televised, like the O.J. Simpson trial in the 1990s, the Anthony trial was kept very private.
And
were you let back in, Russell?
It's quite a big issue.
I was led back into the courthouse this morning. They didn't allow me to go back in.
They didn't have big posters of your face up there and saying, don't let this guy in.
No wanted posters, at least none that I saw.
Okay, good.
And no pictures. Don't take any pictures. All right.
I walked in, had my phone in my pocket, and I did not take it out. Walked with my hands open so they could see I had nothing taking.
Hands in the air.
Yeah, hands in the air.
All right, Russell, what's going on today? We've got, I know that a lot of the testimony after yesterday was pretty difficult, and especially for some of the family members in there. What do we have going on today? Tell us.
Well, so far today we've had and again, let me just paint the picture. The prosecution presents their case first, and when they call a witness, the defense can cross-examine, but we're not going to hear the defense case till probably sometime next week. So prosecution continued calling witnesses today. They've called, so far today, a police officer who was working right next door to the track meet at another athletic complex. He was one of the first to arrive, and they also talked to a paramedic who arrived on scene as well this morning. They're also being cross-examined by the defense attorneys. Again, you know, I got out here at 5:30 this morning, and they were not allowing the public into the parking lot at the courthouse until 6. But there was a line of cars already lined up down the road, and when they opened the gate at 6 o'clock, that line of cars went in very quickly, and people lined up, even though the courthouse wasn't going to open until 7 a.m. They're trying to get a seat to watch what goes on in the courthouse. And really, other than that, you know, what I noticed in the courthouse itself, there's not a lot of people. There's not a lot, the normal everyday activity you would expect in a courtroom. And I think a lot of that is because there's so much security and so much attention on this case that people are putting off courthouse work that they might have to do, or going to get their driver's license or whatever, or car registration. Maybe they're putting that off, at least for right now. But again, we've got some supporters of Carmelo Anthony who are out in the parking lot. You've got a lot of sheriff's deputies who continue to patrol the parking lot. And again, we're gonna get information. Some of this is going to be kind of dull. But yesterday, as you mentioned, some of that was emotional. They listened to the 911 tape yesterday, and that was emotional. And both mothers are in the courtroom, and both of them were crying. And you know, on the 911 call, I'm told that you could hear Austin Metcalf's last gasp for breath, which is just horrible. Now they've been watching some video as well. The camera is turned, or the screen that they're watching the video on is turned away from the gallery, so the gallery can't really see everything. But the judge this morning did tell the jury that nobody in the gallery is allowed to talk or make any noise or any facial expressions, and if they do, they're going to be asked to leave. NBC 5 says that 3 people this morning were asked to leave the courtroom because they weren't following the judge's protocol in that.
I can bet. So it's not just you that they're singling out there, Russell. It's everybody not following the rules.
And the judge has said he's just trying to protect the sanctity of the court and make sure that, you know, nothing happens that could lead to a mistrial or something of that nature. And he just wants to make sure it's a safe and secure location, which I totally understand. We also have heard from a couple of coaches who showed up on the scene.
That's right.
One of those coaches was a former Army medic and said he got there and he kind of testified as to how he found Austin Metcalf and him trying to administer CPR and try to save his life. And he talked about how he wasn't able to do that. So we're going to hear probably more of that as they continue to set the stage. They're trying to show it was murder and that Carmelo Anthony brought that knife and was trying to cause some kind of commotion. The defense, of course, says that's not the case. They're saying this is a kid who had ace grades, went to work 2 jobs while he was in school, and it was nothing more than self-defense.
One of the most controversial aspects of this trial was the jury itself. Anthony is black, and Metcalf was white. And the jury? It was entirely white. Here's a breakdown of how that happened.
It's an all-white jury, and we had speculated, well, you know, that might be grounds for an appeal if it doesn't go the defense's way. Well, maybe not. Dallas Morning News has been looking into this. Here's how it works. Either side obviously can ask to remove potential jurors, but the judge has to decide whether there's a legal reason to excuse them, and according to the Supreme Court, race is not a reason. You can't remove prospective jurors because of race. You can, based on other things, like a prospective juror's occupation, and that was the case in this
trial. Teachers, weren't they?
Yeah. Three jurors, they were all black women, were struck by the prosecution. They said because of their job. They're teachers. So it's possible that prosecutors, they don't want any teachers on the jury because this case involves two high school students. The defense wasn't buying that, saying that race was, in fact, the reason. And so they asked for a ruling from the judge. But if you do that, you need to be able to bring receipts. You got to be able to prove that it was based on race. And Sandra Garrett Thompson is a law professor at the University of Houston Law Center who has studied jury selection, says that's a very hard thing to do. And apparently the judge in this case felt the defense didn't do it. So he allowed the prosecution to strike those three jurors from the pool. And that is how we've got an all-white jury in this case.
It's crazy that it came down to three teachers, because teachers, to me, if I'm a prosecutor, I wouldn't want any teachers on that juror anyway. Doesn't matter, white, black. It's amazing that all three happen to be black, all three happen to be teachers. That's crazy.
Why wouldn't you?
Because you're thinking, okay, I can see my high school student. I would not. You have sympathy.
Yeah.
You're a teacher. My mother was a high school teacher, and she has had her fellow or former students go down bad roads, and she always had a heart for them. Oh, I remember they were so good, and I could see the good in them, and this and that and the other.
But as a teacher, you could potentially have sympathy for either one.
You would think, but in this situation, you would just say, hey, yeah, let's just strike them all together. It'd be like somebody saying, I don't know, you know, I've got a kid who's 17. Yeah, you could have sympathy for both, but most of those people that have a kid that's 17, they struck. So
probably
anyway,
it's...
Let's dive a bit deeper now into Anthony's defense with KRLD's coverage from Monday.
The defense called six witnesses, tried to convince the jury that Anthony was acting in self-defense when he fatally stabbed Austin Metcalf last year. They had witnesses tell the jury that it's not unusual for opposing teams to go to other schools' tents, as the prosecution had claimed. They claimed that Metcalf actually put his hands on Anthony, which caused him to react with the knife. The jury then went to lunch, which was supposed to end at 12:30, but when everyone came back to the courtroom, they were not let in. So for about an hour and a half more, everyone was kept out of the courtroom. Then they came in, and then came word the defense had rested its case. So right now we know that tomorrow morning we're going to hear closing arguments, and the jury is going to be sequestered after that.
And, of course, the question was, there was a lot of speculation when they were taking this lunch break, would they let Carmelo Anthony take the stand?
Yeah, I thought that, and that's what we kept hearing from everybody that was in that courtroom. I just can't imagine that, and none of us are lawyers in here. We did stay at Holiday Inn Expresses, but
right,
other than that, that just seems like a bad idea. And
yeah,
so I'm not really surprised that Anthony didn't end up taking the stand.
Well, the thing about it, too, is that if he, remember, this is like a 17-year-old kid at the time,
yeah,
that this happened. He's still just a teenager, and the prosecution very likely would have blown holes in the
knife?
Story. Right,
why
exactly.
Bring the knife? And that's the big question. I don't think that they ever really answered that in the defense, but we'll see.
It was a hot and sunny day in McKinney on Tuesday when people gathered at the courthouse following the surprise move by Anthony's legal team to rest their defense. Protesters gathered outside, some with signs supporting Anthony and others with signs supporting Metcalf. At one point, a KRLD reporter even captured a photo of a woman lying down in the heat as everyone waited for the verdict.
Emotions ran high outside the Collin County Courthouse all week, and today was no exception. KRLD's Chris Fox continues our team coverage.
Tensions began to rise outside of the Collin County Courthouse this morning, around the same time the jury began deliberating, just before 11 a.m.
This whole thing been racist. We didn't make it racist.
Then the news came. The jury had decided that Anthony was guilty. Shortly after, he was sentenced.
Vocal standoffs between supporters of Carmelo Anthony and those seeking justice for Austin Metcalf. Anger from the Anthony supporters as word of the murder conviction began popping up on their phones. Defense attorney Sean Duretti has been following the trial.
You heard from 21 witnesses. To come back that quickly, I think for them it must have been a clear-cut case that state proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt in that he was guilty of intentional murder.
Outside, things got tense even before the verdict was announced. 35 years in prison for Carmelo Anthony. Under state law, now that Anthony has been sentenced, he's back in custody, now considered a convicted felon.
And here's an account of what was going on inside the courtroom.
Yeah, we were told that when the verdict was read, guilty of murder, that Carmelo Anthony broke down, cried, had to be helped back to his seat. His mother was an audible gasp in the courtroom from her. It was then on to the punishment phase, where she was the only one that was called to testify on behalf of her son. She asked the jury for mercy. She said that her son was truly sorry for what had happened. No opening statements were made. Then the judge and the lawyers went back and decided on what charges and the documents that jurors will use to decide the punishment. Now, that punishment can be 5 to 99 years. The jury will be allowed to consider sudden passion. That's a sentence of 2 to 20 years. Now, the prosecutor, Bill Wirsky, said whether you like it or not, mercy to the guilty is cruelty to the innocent. He did not give a certain time period or year sentence that he would like the jury to consider, but he did say reject this sudden passion argument that Carmelo Anthony is guilty of murder and therefore should be sentenced as such. And the defense says decisions in the heat of the moment are different from decisions after cool reflection. They also asked the jury to reflect the age or to consider the age of Carmelo Anthony. When this happened, he was 17. So the jury got the case again at 4:47.
And a lot of people, even you had said earlier today that Carmelo Anthony, it is possible, has spent his last night in his own home bed.
Yeah, we were thinking that today on the show, the Mid-Morning Mic Check, is it could think about that last moment of rest, freedom, thinking that you could be spending a large amount of your life in prison.
Because there's no bond now.
There is no bond. He goes directly into the Collin County Sheriff's custody, and that's where he is right now.
Back outside, reactions to the news continued, and KRLD was still on the scene.
I'm Emily Capetillo, and tensions became higher when people started shouting guilty or guilty of murder once the verdict was reached. Some people erupted into tears, arguments, disbelief, and even anger.
The reason why this case is so important is because America is terrified of black self-defense. They can't fathom it, you know? They think they need to have the ups on us every day. And, you know, if I say anything that the McAfeeans disagree with, all of a sudden I'm a racist. And I'm like, wait a minute now.
Supporters for Anthony say the trial wasn't fair, while supporters for Austin Metcalf say he deserved justice in the case.
We've got a group of people who are now bending down to pray. They're in the middle of the parking lot, and that's kind of what's happening at the moment. I think right now what I would describe it is, for the Carmelo Anthony advocates, is shock. One woman down on the ground, she's crying. Several other people walking around. You can hear others that are crying as well.
It happened as quick as it did because justice delayed is justice denied, and I'm sure they're going to appeal it, but I'm happy with the decision.
All right.
That's one of the Austin Metcalf supporters, advocates. Not sure how to describe him, but again, crying on one side, on the other side, pleased with the verdict.
And at the KRLD studio in Dallas, around 35 miles from McKinney, the news team was also reacting to Anthony's verdict in real time.
Let's bring in our whole group here. We've got Eric Bushman, we've got David Rankin, we got Mike Rogers, my co-host at the Mid-Morning Mic Check. Guys, surprise, what are you thinking?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is right now we're going to go right into the punishment phase, and the range here for sentencing is anywhere from 5 to 99 years. The jury could still give Anthony a relatively, I don't know what the right word
light
is,
sentence.
Light sentence. Yeah. I should say that, because the minimum here is 5, and the maximum for the manslaughter charge, that I understand it, was 20.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still an option here for a light sentence. And, of course, we had talked about the same attorney, Toby Shook, got Amber Geiger a relatively light sentence when he represented her. So that may be a similar approach that the defense attorney is going to take now.
A lot of shock and kind of surprise, too, as well, is that how quickly this jury returned a verdict. They only got the case at about 11 o'clock this morning, and they turned right around. They had some kind of a verdict. We've been waiting for this verdict for almost an hour itself.
Yeah, I really, when they, it was a quick verdict, I figured that was going to probably happen because they knew that this guy was guilty of something.
The deliberations lasted, I think, maybe a little under 3 hours.
When it's
that quick,
it's
generally
not good
for the defendant.
Is there a feel from any of you on which way they go? I think if the feel from what I've seen reported,
that they'll probably go on the lighter side, as Russell has said. It's somewhere maybe, and I say light, 15 years to me would be kind of light. I don't think maybe 20, but someone 15 to possibly 20.
Of course, the question is, you know, this guy is now an adult, 19 years old. He's been actually convicted of murder in Texas, and people are worried about, you know, his life being ruined. But then we take a look at the Metcalf family. They've lost a son, and what is going to be a jail sentence, a prison sentence, that's going to satisfy justice, as we heard from that one representative that Russell was talking about, justice denied. What is a doable sentence for a murder charge?
Eventually, Anthony was sentenced to 35 years in prison. One day after the conviction, his attorneys filed an intent to appeal. Defense attorneys Jeremy Rosenthal and Terry Bentley Hall, who don't work together and did not participate in the Carmelo Anthony trial, joined KRLD to discuss angles for the appeal. We'll start with Bentley Hall discussing the all-white jury angle.
And the appellate court will take a look at that and see if it was truly a race-neutral reason that those jurors, potential jurors, were excused.
Rosenthal says that's not an easy path.
The trial judge gets a lot of leeway with that call, so it would be difficult to overturn that on appeal, but you better believe that's going to be part of the appeal.
As for the criticism that there were no black jurors, Wersky says a quarter of the jurors were minorities, and that was a fair cross-section of the county.
And as for the prosecution,
District Attorney Greg Willis and lead attorney for the prosecution, Bill Wersky, say they are relieved following the murder conviction and 35-year sentence for Carmelo Anthony. Wersky says he's been involved in a lot of high-profile cases, but has never seen as much misinformation and intentional disinformation put out on social media platforms.
I've never seen the type and the intensity of that misinformation. And it seemed to draw a lot of people off sides. But what was gratifying for me is knowing one day we'd get into court where 12 citizens could hear the fact.
Willis says while they wanted the public to see the trial, they were concerned for the safety of those involved. And so they agreed to prohibit audio and video of the trial.
Everything has to be balanced. You know, word still got out. In a perfect world, everybody could have seen it live. But it's not a perfect world, and people had real concern about their safety.
And the fundraising platform GiveSendGo has now closed the fundraiser for Carmelo Anthony's family following his murder conviction. The family was asking for $1.4 million to help with legal expenses, relocation due to escalating threats, transportation, and basic living needs. The platform put out a statement online saying the fundraiser was created to support pretrial needs and funds were dispersed over the last year for lawful purposes. But again, that has now been closed.
For more on the case, News Nation's Xavier Walton joined KRLD the day after Anthony was convicted.
Now, Xavier, man, we were watching yesterday on TV. You were right out in the middle of it outside that courthouse yesterday when that verdict came down.
I was, and if you're watching, I was not alone. Dozens of people out there. I'll tell you what, I'm glad you guys said that. Yesterday was a whirlwind. And you know, obviously they had court on Saturday, but I don't think anybody really anticipated it. Some of the attorneys I'd been speaking to all along, they said, given, you know, how this trial had gone so far, they anticipated that maybe, you know, Monday both sides would rest their cases. But I mean, to think that we went through the sentencing phase where he had 35 years. I just stopping to thinking about it. It happened so quick. I don't know that a lot of people had time to digest what happened. But I could tell you, you know, on both sides of it, it was a lose-lose situation. I was out there next to people who were supporting Austin Metcalf's family and, you know, obviously Carmelo Anthony's family. And a lot of the people I spoke to said there was no win in this one.
I was just going to ask you, too, when you're in the middle of it, we were watching you on, in fact, actually took some of the News Nation coverage yesterday. How was the feeling there when the word started to creep out, because nothing was televised, obviously, everything had to be word of mouth, that he had been found guilty of murder?
You know, I would say shocked but not surprised. The people I was surrounded by who were there in support of Carmelo Anthony and his family, they kind of had this idea, like this, in the back of their heads, that this was going to happen. based on, you know, what they've experienced in their lifetime. And this is, you know, from them, what I was getting from them being on the ground. So a lot of initially when the, you know, verdict was read and people started trickling out, the first thing that I kept hearing was about, you know, the jury. You know, not a single black person on the jury. So a lot of people were questioning whether or not he was even going to get a fair trial before the trial even started. And that was, you know, you start hearing people yelling all white jury, and, you know, there was a lot of anger. There's a lot of frustration. And then there was just an incredible amount of sadness. There was a lady, you know, who I'd been running into because she'd been out here pretty much every day documenting everything. And she fell to her knees. She started crying. And, you know, it was on live TV, and I just, you know, asked her a couple of questions. But, you know, there's so much raw emotion playing out from, you know, from even when jury selection started to then when you had a verdict being read. It was just so much emotion.
Have we heard from any of the jurors yet as to their thought process in coming up with the verdict and the sentence? They had a pretty wide range. It could have gone, I think, 5 to 99 years. Why 35? Has anyone spoken out about that?
Not yet, at least not that I've seen. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of the reading and watching a lot of the other news organizations, seeing who's got what. I haven't seen anything yet about that. But yeah, you know, obviously guilty of murder. They didn't go the manslaughter route. And so 5 to 99 years, they landed at 35, eligible for parole after 17 and a half. You know, that's, you know, if nothing else happens, he gets out good behavior. Ironically, 17 is how old both of the young men were. Austin Metcalf, no longer with us, 17 years old when he died. You know, reading some of those impact statements, wow, extremely powerful. You know, the mom saying, you know, you were sentenced to 35 years. I'm going to be, you know, doing a life sentence without my son. Yeah, you hear and see stuff like that, and you just think, man, both of these families were just absolutely ruined, crushed. I mean, I understand, you know, Carmelo Anthony is still alive, but, you know, he's going away for a long time.
I know that you hit on something, the victim impact statements. That's what I was going to get to. You obviously spoke about the mom, but the father and even Hunter Metcalf also did a victim impact statement, and they both asked that Carmelo Anthony looked them in the eye, and apparently he wasn't able to, or he didn't.
That's right. And yeah, I think and I actually have it in front of me here. You can't even look me in the eye right now, but you can stab my effing son in the heart. That was from Jeff Metcalf, the father of Austin's dad. You know, and the amount of emotion, can you imagine? I know there was a portion during the trial where the family was asked to leave the court because of the graphic and just gruesome nature of what was being shown to jurors. That was, you know, some of the most gripping testimony when you're hearing from the medical examiner who did the autopsy, who performed the autopsy on Austin Metcalf. And the medical examiner testified that it was a gaping hole 2.5 inches in directly into Austin Metcalf's heart. So when you hear, or, you know, the impact statement from the dad, there's just so much anger, so much frustration. And you know what? Like, you can't tell somebody how to feel at the end of the day. And, you know, this dad and then this, you know, his brother, the twin who was literally there as his brother died, you know, he said, you took a son, a brother, a friend, my best friend from this world. You took someone away from me who was supposed to be an uncle to my kids. Now I want everything taken from you. You know, that's just, guys, it has been an emotional, as you've been following it, emotionally just dramatic. And at the end of the day now, I think what's happening next is there's going to be an appeal process from the Anthony side. But still, by no means is the Metcalf family waking up thinking we won. Because at the end of the day, Austin Metcalf is no longer here.
While Anthony's family has said they're planning for an appeal, Anthony has also reportedly said that he's now penniless and can't afford a lawyer. We'll be keeping an ear on this case, so check back for more updates. Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KRLD 1080 in Dallas. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.